So my first question is the obvious one. Oh, how did you come up with the idea for this? Because it's a pretty high concept series.
The concept for Iris kind of came from a couple of different directions or a couple of different trains of thought. One was just getting frustrated with the idea of the realities of space travel, which is that the space is pretty fucking empty. Like there's nothing up there, and the things that are up there are light years away. Like by the time you got to the nearest habitable planet, everyone you knew on Earth would already be dead. And getting not just people up there, but terraforming machines and supplies and something to build a whole new world would take so much time. And sci-fi has a very strong and rich history of dealing with that. But it kind of came from me wanting to deal with that in another direction. So I looked towards quantum physics and the theories of alternate timelines and parallel universes and all that kind of stuff, and realize that there's theoretically an infinite number of Earths out there that you could conquer. And if you could, brave the quantum time stream, you've got all these planets, these ripe targets that are exactly where you think they're going to be. They're the exact size you need them to be, and they have the all the atmospheres, all the atmospheric resources that you need to survive as a human colony. So it struck me as kind of a different way of thinking about space travel, space exploration, space colonization, and all that stuff. And then the other thing that really attracted me to the idea of higher Earth was the idea of identity and the idea of having multiple versions of yourself out there. And to me, that's really the core of the book are the characters and their analogs in different time streams and how they come into conflict or how they come into agreement or how they're suspicious of each other and what their histories are together throughout different time streams and all that kind of stuff. And that's something that I'm really excited about in these upcoming issues we got coming out, especially issue 5, which is being drawn by Morning Glory's Joe Eisner.
You know, one of the things I liked right away about the series when I read the first issue is that I've always had a problem sometimes with, alternate universes that tend to be sort of post-apocalyptic. You know, if you take a look at something like Age of Apocalypse, and especially now that it's, exists as this parallel universe, and they're aware that there is the regular Marvel universe out there. And I've always said, well, gee, if their Earth is so horrible, why don't they just go and just leave it and go to the Marvel universe? You know, like
Why
just.
don't they just up and leave, especially if you're the Age of Apocalypse world where you're this bloodthirsty, ruthless, warmongering planet? Like you gotta imagine, there's at least 100,000 versions of Earth out there whose butts you could kick, no problem, right?
Yeah, and what's so great about it to make it worth fighting for? Just up and move, you know, that's how I felt about it. And then I come along and I read, your first issue, and you've got it right there. You know, the girl's she's living on this garbage planet, and somebody comes along and says, hey, there's a better place here. Let's leave this dump, and they do. And I like
Yeah.
that. I like that a lot.
Awesome.
So was. Did you go for something along the lines of you're trying to do a sort of a parable about class warfare and maybe even the elements of colonialism here?
Yeah, definitely. I've done a ton of research just for my own pleasure on the Aztecs. One of the results of that was Sacrifice, my self-published limited series about the Aztecs before the European invasion. And you can't learn a lot about the Aztecs without learning a lot about colonial Europe and how they looked at the world and how they saw things and how they went about subjugating these new worlds, which were very much, not to go off on a tangent, but these were the closest experiences mankind has ever had to what we would call an alien encounter. Like this is one side of the world encountering another side of the world that both grew up in complete isolation from each other. And that whole mentality is so fascinating to me. And it's something I definitely want to explore or consider on a larger scale. You know, if you were a very colonial-minded empire, if you had no problem conquering worlds and subjugating their people, what would you do with a theoretical infinite number of Earths? You know, you wouldn't just limit yourself to say, oh, well, we'll just conquer two or three and call it a day. You would tend to conquer more and more, and then when you have a plethora of Earths, you start realizing, well, we're just going to keep a couple Earths aside just for, you know, mining the resources, or we're going to keep a couple Earths aside just to, like, contain all the trash that we've been generating, that sort of thing. So it's those questions that became really fascinating to me once I came up with the basic concept.
So I noticed that you've been telling this story really mainly from the perspective of Heidi, who really initially wasn't even familiar with the concept of parallel Earths. You know, she had this introduced to her, and she's sort of a newcomer to this. Was it a deliberate choice to tell the story from her perspective?
Yeah. I mean, that's nothing new. That's a common technique to have a reader perspective character that's new to the world. You know, in this case, almost as new to the world as the reader is. Or, you know, actually, in this case, the reader, if they're an experienced comic book reader, knows more about higher Earth and multiple universes than Heidi does, just from exposure to sci-fi and comic books and movies and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, perspective is going to be an interesting thing in this book once we get, you know, once we see kind of what the effect of, or what the effect is of moving from planet to planet, or seeing the Earth in completely different forms or completely different states of human advancement, or the opposite, human society devolving over time or crumbling. And when we get to, you know, the actual throne world, the actual throne world of higher Earth, and start exploring it from that end too, then we'll have two, you know, we'll be able to see the empire from both ends, from the gutter and the stars, so to speak.
So higher Earth is really the name of the empire itself. It's not just one world, right?
That's correct. It's the name of the empire that rules from one specific Earth.
And are you going to get into the background of how this empire formed, where it started, and all that?
Absolutely. Thanks for asking. That's perfect, because issue 5 is the secret origin of higher Earth, we're calling it. It's a done-in-one story. It's illustrated by a special guest star in art, Morning Glory's Joe Eisma, who's a fantastic artist and a great collaborator. And we've been getting some of the pages in, and he's totally kicking ass. But it's a one issue story. It has very direct connections to our main characters, Rex and Heidi, but it sort of dramatizes that moment where someone made that connection between a technology that can breach the, you know, the quantum veil, so to speak, and a desire to expand, a desire to conquer, and also a philosophy of this is the Earth that's better than all the other Earths, and it is our right and our duty to conquer the other Earths. So we get a taste of that fateful moment in issue 5, and it really does serve as sort of a secret origin for the entire empire, the entire structure that we tell the story from within.
So, you know, you said Joe Eisma is coming on for a guest stint on issue 5. Does Francesco Biagini return for the rest of the series?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He'll be back for issue 6. We're just giving him a little break. He's been kicking so much ass on the book, and also Boone's Elric book at the same time. We just wanted to give him a chance to catch his breath a little bit. He's been just an amazing artist to have along on the book. He's a fearless artist. I have put in some crazy, insane things into the script, and he has not flinched once. He just gets down to business and draws the hell out of him. But we love Francesco. We want him on the book long term. He's the key part of Higher Earth, so we'll be psyched to have him back with issue 6.
So let's talk about Rex a little bit. What are his motivations, you know, so far as you can tell us at this point?
So far as we can tell you right now, Rex is keeping it close to the vest. You know, Rex is a man who is used to keeping secrets. How far have you read so far? I'm trying to think.
I have read issue 3, which I believe is going to be released to the general public next week.
Got it. Okay. So in issue 3, you'll start to see exactly what the connection is between Rex and the rest of the Empire. You'll begin to understand where he comes from and why he is where he is at this moment. And what Rex is really looking for is revenge. And I think, just from what people can see in issues 1 and 2, you know, crash landing on a trash planet at the backwater edges of the Empire, being chased and hunted down by, not just regular immigration police, but also some more shadowy figures. Rex has somehow ended up on the wrong side of the Empire.
So he's motivated by revenge. I mean, that's not necessarily the noblest of motivations. Is that an indication that maybe Heidi can't completely trust him?
Yeah, I think that's really an open question. You know, Heidi doesn't know a whole lot about Rex right now. She's been put in positions where she's kind of forced to trust him, forced to go with him. You know, there's no guarantee that Rex is a noble character or he's going after what he's going after for the right reasons. But then again, you know, Heidi is a character that's going to be looking for revenge as well, just for different reasons. And that those missions of revenge are sometimes going to be peril and sometimes they're going to come into conflict.
Now, I have a sort of a technical question about the notion of someone being illegal on these Earths. It's not simply a question of them coming from some unwanted Earth. It's actually whether they had permission or not, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is an empire that is gripping onto these Earths with a tighter and tighter fist. This is an empire who is not unfamiliar with resistance and rebellion. This is an empire that doesn't believe in live and let live. They're not afraid to trample on what we would consider our personal freedoms or our basic human rights in the name of the overall security of the empire. So for most people, moving from Earth to Earth is very restricted or just straight up illegal. When they conquer a new Earth that's been populated, they would take the entire, depending on what they want to do with this Earth, they could take the entire population and shuttle them off to what would the Earth we see in issue 2, which is Sunshine Earth 9, basically a planet that's covered in one giant sprawling housing project. So it's not just this is an empire that restricts freedom of movement from Earth to Earth with a very heavy hand.
And someone can always become illegal even if they were legal before. Like in issue 2, he talks with this doctor, Adam Regelman, and, Regelman says, oh, you're illegal now, thereby implying that at some point he was allowed to be on this Earth, but for what he's done, I guess he's become illegal?
Well, you know, Rex's his fall from grace has made him illegal on almost every Earth at this point. His origin, as we'll see, comes from being tight with the Empire. I'm trying to think what else I can say that's spoiling it. This is a guy who, because of his connection with the Empire, was used to freely moving from Earth to Earth. Or because of his job with the Empire, it required him to move freely from Earth to Earth. But because of his fall from grace, now his movement, not just his movement is restricted, but he's a wanted guy. So Rex is on the other side now, whereas before he was on the side of the people that were restricting movements on Earth, and he's the one who's being restricted. And you're right, it's not just a matter of being illegal or wanted in general, but it's a matter of which Earth you're on at which time. You can be perfectly legal on one Earth, but illegal on all the other Earths. And then we'll see how deep the division between the classes get. We'll see that it's not just the wealth that's unequal, but the population density that's unequal, the distribution of resources that's unequal, and part of the way that they enforce that and satiate their upper classes is by trying to keep people where they think they belong.
And you know, your concept of parallelists, you're working off of the premise of sort of a point in divergence in history, and that's how they split into parallel Earths. Is that right? I mean, something happens one way on one Earth and another way on another Earth, and that's where they diverge. Is that how you're working it?
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the general quantum theory I have in mind. Despite their technical proficiency, higher Earth has only recently become somewhat adept at finding specific Earths that they're looking for, which is to say that the technology is still wild enough that when they find a new Earth, it may not be the ideal place for them to go. You know, there are some Earths that are populated but have a really weak populace, or a really weak society, or there might be Earths that have something that they really want in terms of an abundance of resources, but because there are a ton of resources there, the human civilization is very advanced and also very warlike. They're not going to give up with a fight. So you know, as we move through the series, we'll see how the Empire has learned to create a closed system with only the Earths that they that are profitable to acquire.
What's interesting to me is that the variance of an individual. You know, in the case, you know, of some of these characters, they all seem to have different names. So is that sort of implying that the point of divergence for their respective Earths was that their mother and father decided to name them something different?
Not necessarily. What it implies is that higher Earth doesn't have the ability to find the closest Earth next door in a quantum sense. They don't have the ability to say, like, okay, give me an Earth that's only 0.00001% divergent or whatever, which might be more convenient for them than coming up on Earths at random. For them, it's almost trial and error. And sometimes they go to a new timeline, and for whatever reason, Earth isn't where they even expected it to be. That's one of those places where they're like, okay, well, peace out, we're going to turn around and go home. This whole timeline is useless to us. So Higher Earth is kind of stuck in their expansion in dealing with Earths that are not exactly what they expect them to be.
So, you know, like I said, we've had two issues out so far with the third on the way on Wednesday. What's been the reaction to the series so far?
It's been great. It's been really rewarding. You know, this marketplace can be very unkind to a certain kind of series. We knew that going into this. This is a book with brand new characters, a brand new concept, brand new title. Francisco Biagini has a lot of experience writing some great books. I have minimal experience on some previous books, so it's not like this is Jeff Johns and Jim Lee creating a new series. You know, we went into it knowing that this was going to be a risky bet no matter what, but so far everything has been fantastic. We had a huge debut with our number one issue. It was a dollar issue, which made it really easy for people to take a chance. We saw a really great retention rate from that first issue, and we've had multiple sellouts for every issue so far, which is very, very gratifying. And the response I've been getting from fans online or conventions has just been fantastic, which is good to know that, that there's an audience out there for really hard science fiction stories, and there seems to be kind of a a resurgence of that right now with all of Jonathan Hickman's limited series at Image and Brian K. Vaughan's saga and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we're just doing our thing in our corner, but it's good to know that there's space in the marketplace for books like these.
So, do you have any teases about what's coming up in the series?
Man. God, I wish I could just tell. I'm so excited for these next issues to come out because they really, what can I say? I will say that Rex and Heidi are not the only versions of themselves that are out there, and you'll meet more of the analogs of them very soon and very often.
So my last question for you, what else is on your plate these days? I know there's a lot, but tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, for Marvel, I just wrapped on John Carter, Gods of Mars, with Ramon Perez and Jordi Belair, and I believe the final issue comes out later this month or next month. 5-issue limited series, just a beautiful, beautiful book. People haven't checked it out. You know, all you gotta do is flip through a couple of pages, and they'll be hooked. I'm writing The Ultimates for Marvel. My first solo issue after co-writing with Jonathan Hickman comes out this Wednesday. It's issue 13, which is the first chapter. It's the first chapter in The Ultimates. It's the Via We Fall, which is the line-wide event that we're doing this summer. Issue 13 also features the return of Ultimate Captain America, which kicks off the storyline where America is basically falling apart around the Ultimates and kind of what they do about it. I'm really excited for that. The Divide We Fall is going to be a lot of fun, and the summer is going to be a very exciting time for the Ultimate Universe. For Boom, I'm writing Higher Earth and Fan Boys vs. Zombies, and then I am self-publishing a book called Sacrifice. It's a 6-issue limited series about a kid who accidentally goes back in time to the height of the Aztec Empire, and been on kind of a hiatus for a while, but we will have an announcement very soon about the resumption of the series.
Very cool. Well, I really want to encourage people to check out Higher Earth because it's a really cool book, and check out your other work as well because you're a really talented writer, and I really appreciate you talking with me.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care, Sam.